There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capehorn. All the booze news and views. From Absinthe to Zinfandel. First for news. News for thirst.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to It's the Drink Talking, where we distill all the drinks news of the week into a very handy sort of listening thing that means you get all the information in your ears. And it is being presented by me, Ben McFarland, by far the most handsome of the three presenters. Oh, I think we all agree. But I'm joined, as ever, to my right, Sam Capehorn.
That's
welcome.
Me.
How are you doing, Sam?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good, that's enough. Tom?
Sam, well, you'll be talking about wine, won't
yes.
you?
Yes.
Let's finish what you're going to say.
You are one of very few mistresses of
well,
wine.
Well, yes, so my brand name, if you will, is the Mistress of Wine, but I'm actually a master of wine. It's really confusing. Mm. I think there's about 356.
Oh, but is it sexist? Is it sexist? Mm. I don't know what sexist is anymore.
Yeah, I don't
Would
know.
Would you rather be called a master of wine?
Do
you
no,
find
I like
it more
being
sexist?
A master of wine.
Is that actor, actress
bit,
sort
exactly.
of thing?
No, it's quite authoritative. I'm quite happy being a master of wine. And it's shortened to MW anyway, so
that's true.
Gender
that's
is quite... thus removed.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, and so I am basically the wine person, and today I'm doing my Legend of Liquor.
All right, keep your powder dry on that one. And hello, Tom, my darling.
Hello. Hello, dear. Yes, my name is Tom Sandon.
Tom Sandon.
Yeah. I am one of the Thinking Drinkers with Ben, and I talk about spirits. And I would like to say a big thank you to all the listeners, Ben, who've been coming to our shows, because we've been very lucky, Sam.
Do you have many repeat visitors?
We do. We're starting to build what our agent, what a pair of toss bags, talk about agents, our agent calls a fan base.
Yeah.
But other people call mentally ill.
The show I went to with you guys both were in dresses for a short period of time, I think.
Mm. Sure.
Yeah, air stewardesses. No.
Oh, yeah.
Here,
yeah,
you,
right.
Yours
yeah,
particularly are, you're yeah, kind
I've
of
got,
like...
I've got great legs.
Blazed yeah. on my retinas.
Okay, good.
And so I can see why people would be rushing back for a second fix.
Yeah, we also wear pants and bikinis and all sorts in it. But that's not the reason. I think the reason is because we taste free drink in the show and we talk about it. And come onto our website, thinkingdrinkers.com,
yep.
and you can see our tour dates. But thank you, really. And
yes.
we are, as ever, surprised that people are still coming and seeing us. And it's very, very nice.
Humbling.
I don't want to say humbling.
Humbling.
Because I don't want to be humble. I want to be rich.
I hate people who say they're humble.
And arrogant. Thank
so
you.
There we go.
That's
anyway, right, let's crack on because there's stuff to do, things to say. And the first feature of the podcast, as always, is a spit or swallow, where we showcase something we are very fond of in the drinks world and something we're not so pleased about. And this week, you lucky things, it's me.
Mm.
And I am going to be starting with my spit. And it regards Barbie.
The doll?
The doll.
All right.
Yes. I never had a Barbie. Sam?
Guess. Yes or no?
I think you probably did.
I would say that you wouldn't out of choice, but there might have been one in your toy box because...
You've got sisters.
You've got sisters, yeah.
Yeah.
Love them.
Love
well,
them.
There we go.
No,
good.
I wouldn't have
had
I
loads.
Wouldn't...
Oh, the little outfit made a bonk bed.
A bonk
Ken.
Bed.
Wait.
A bonk bed.
Wait a minute.
Now you get your little outfits. You get a new outfit for Christmas, your birthday. Yeah. I even managed to wangle getting a new outfit for my siblings' birthdays. Mm. I'm all ears.
Well,
you haven't asked me.
You're not slagging her off, are you?
You haven't asked me if I had any Barbies.
In the interest of gender neutrality, did you have a Barbie when you were younger?
I didn't. And neither did my sister, because she had two older brothers. So she had,
not even a Cindy.
Unfortunately, action men and things that were just left over.
Wasn't Barbie more
sexy?
More sexy than Cindy?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was quite sexy, but
no,
sort of
Barbie,
quite gender neutral.
About...
Oh, I thought you were talking about
action men. All right, move on. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. He wasn't sexy.
Yeah, those grip hands. Mm.
Those eyes, though. Those eyes. I'd follow you anywhere.
Well, it's Barbie, but more specifically, Ken. Ken has been relaunched. There's loads of new Kens come out. One's got cornrows. He hasn't come out. He's still with Barbie, but there would be
nothing. Wait a minute. He's getting older, but he's got cornrows. Is he going through a midlife crisis?
No, he's got the cornrows and...
is he a Ken of colour, or is he just got cornrows?
There's an Asian Ken, there's a Ken of mixed parentage, I think is the most politically correct way of saying that, and there's a Latino Ken. And then in terms of the hairstyles he's got cornrows. One of them's got a man bun.
Nice.
Right, again, any, that is something I associate
beards
with young
or any
people.
Redheads?
No.
Yeah, whoa.
No redheads.
No
these are aimed at children. Mm. Come on. but what's pertinent to my swallow, they've given him
spit.
One of his... Spit, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, he's
you.
All spit?
It's my spit.
Well, he swallowed too much.
He
maybe.
Swallowed too much because one of them is he's got a bit of a paunch on him. Which I think good. As a
well
man
done.
Who...
As a fat man.
As a fat man. No, as a man of shape.
As a man of a shape.
As a man of shape. Yeah, they've released one where he's got a bit of a belly on him. But all the press have described it, and I've seen the press release from Mattel, the... all of them have described it as a beer belly. All
oh,
of them.
That is outrageous because...
And you're
that's
like, well, why?
Just, that's not fair.
Well, isn't it could be baked bean belly.
It's right, more likely to be crisps.
Yeah. Or if he's got, like, a man bun, I mean, he's probably a hipster, so he spends his time in coffee shops...
Loading up
loads
brownies.
Loads of pastries.
But is it the Ken who's had two kids with Barbie and, you know, to be just fair, he's just on the wane. He's in his 40s. He can't be bothered. The real joy in life is that one-hour window you get at the end of the day where you watch television and eat chocolate biscuits. Is he that Ken?
Yeah.
Is he that
strangely,
Ken?
He's Ken that's obviously given up but still thinks he should have cornrows.
That is a midlife crisis, Ken. Is that what they've created?
Is that what they've called it?
Does he drive a fancy sports car?
I don't know.
Date
don't, I mean,
a young Barbie? It's all getting a bit sinister
anyway.
Now.
Anyway, the point being is that beer, again...
Is blamed.
Is blamed. Yeah. Beer contains no fat. Mm. None. Not sausage. Nothing.
Not a sausage?
I don't know.
Nothing.
Sometimes I garnish my beer with a sausage.
Yeah. And it's not got any cholesterol either. And according to scientists at the University of London, moderate beer drinkers are no more prone to developing a belly than anyone else.
Right.
It's not the beer that's the problem.
Oh,
it's the lifestyle.
Is. Yeah,
okay,
of
it's
course.
The and it is the alcohol. Mm. How many calories do you think in a half pint of beer?
Oh, 100?
Bang on.
Wow.
Well, sort of, 95.
Bloody close.
Yeah.
Well done.
It's nowhere near as calorific as you think. A pint of beer has fewer calories than a pint of orange juice and a pint of milk. 250-millilitre glass of wine has 193 calories.
OK, let's not go bashing other forms,
because no,
I'm imagining
no,
a gin and tonic's
saying,
coming next.
No, but they don't say to him, oh, no, look, he's put on a bit of weight, he's got a rum belly.
No,
yeah.
No.
You have lager louts, you don't have a Chardonnay lout, do
no,
you?
No, not really.
You think a lot of the alcohol-related social disorder, I imagine some of it is ladies drinking too much wine, but you never see wine
getting...
Yeah,
you definitely can get a wine belly.
Mm.
But,
yeah,
but it's not really... Maybe it's not alliterative.
Mm. And beer also has high levels of good fat.
Mm.
Good fat. Okay. Which reduces the risk of heart attacks. Beer is rich in all sorts of vitamin B, riboflavin, folate, cobalamin. Yeah. Like bananas, beer is high in potassium, which keeps you regular, breaks up.
Well, that explains a lot after a
and it keeps
bananas.
And then bones clicking, it keeps you know, heart ticking. And, I mean, if you go into hops, we've done hops before, they are very good and they're used in Chinese medicine. And also, just to hammer home this point, Did you hear about the beer yoga in London? There is a beer yoga session you can go down to, and you do all the yoga stuff normally, but you are drinking a nice bottle of beer at the same time. The idea is it complements the joy of drinking beer and the mindfulness of yoga.
Yeah.
And I think it's
We're in different territory there. I'm not a yoga aficionado.
No.
I go for a run if I'm lucky.
Do you?
And that will be my exercise.
Running.
Yeah, it's cardiovascular, you see. And
yeah.
I care about my heart. But I would have a drink of beer. I'd have a packet of crisps as well.
And
because sometimes I have some fruit. And sometimes, you know, I have
all
a cake.
About balance.
And
also,
it's about balance.
And I think it's fine that he has a beer belly, because I think they've been together for years, Barbie and Ken. And I think she must look at him and just think...
She hasn't got a lard arse, though. Why haven't they given her a bigger pair of hips?
Well, but also,
what do her boobs look
like? Think...
Saggy. Not really. They look great. Perky little things.
Yeah, they're still the same.
Still the same. Yeah.
That's my spit.
Yeah,
stop,
I agree.
Stop giving men a complex about their beer bellies. It's just a belly. It's from peanuts and crisps and pastries. And I can tell you that from experience.
Love pastries.
Now, my swallow is a good one. Now
it will be the judge of that,
yeah.
Surely.
Mostly the listeners.
I don't care what you
say. See how many listeners we have after this podcast. They will be the judge.
Okay, so here's a question for you.
Get your paper ready and ask the question.
How many tons of bread do you think are wasted every year?
50.
Tons?
Yeah.
Million tons?
Problem is...
Million tons? I said 50. Got to be somewhere in between.
I go 50 million tons.
Okay.
Wrong!
Wrong! Okay, that's my wrong. Tom, you do it. You say?
500 million tons.
Wrong!
I said 50 million.
Yeah, 900,000 tons of bread are wasted every
that
year.
That is shocking.
How many slices a day are thrown away?
Well, actually...
Well, just divide that by 365. I haven't got my calculator.
I'll tell you. 24 million slices every day. And in terms of calories, which brings back to my previous point, that's enough to lift over 26 million people out of hunger. And the reason I'm telling you this is because there is this wonderful new beer called Toast Beer, brewed using thrown away, disused bread.
Mm.
So they are recycling this.
Where did they get this from?
Don't ask.
This doesn't sound like an idea we've come up with ourselves, Ben.
What?
Sounds like some sort of crazy foreign idea. Is this an
English
idea?
No, it's English.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, it's British.
Good
it's British entrepreneurialism.
Okay.
And... did you know as well, a single sandwich factory discards 13,000 slices of fresh bread every day. And do you know why that is?
Quality control?
No, because people refuse to buy sandwiches made with crusts. I would buy a sandwich.
No.
If it was a bit cheaper.
Yes, you would. It would be dry.
Yeah.
Would you really? You would sacrifice a nice tasty sandwich for a cheaper sandwich?
If you were in
Pret-a-Manger
or any other sandwich shops are available... And at the end, they just went, oh, this is the crust section, and it's 30% cheaper, but it's...
It'd have to be 50% cheaper at the very
least.
It's a crust. I like a bit of crust. I like a bit of crust with some butter and some Marmite on. I love a crust. I'm all over crust.
Anyway,
crust's all over me.
Listen.
But I just think, no, you're wrong there.
Anyway,
you're going wrong. Move on.
So what's happened is that they take this bread and they brew a beer with it. They first brewed it in Hackney, at the Hackney Brewery, obviously. And what they do is they collaborate with lots of different breweries. And this one is in Yorkshire, actually.
This is all getting a bit logistical.
At the Hamberton Brewery. And they do a pale ale. I know we don't normally do tasting.
No, let's keep it quite light, because we've got rum coming up shortly. So.
And they do a brown toast porter. They do a white toast Weiss beer. And it's just a really good idea.
Quite tasty.
It's quite bready, isn't it? It's got a sort of bready quality.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, bread.
I know.
Obviously, bread.
I'm an expert.
Yeah.
It's quite a nice deep colour, and it's quite strongly flavoured, I'd say. But in a good way, not a bad way. And I can see it's 5%. Mm. I like that.
Yeah, it's good beer. It's toasted sort of colour.
So not only are they eliminating bread waste... They are raising awareness of general food waste, which
I think
is terrible.
Good guys.
And they send all their profits to Feedback, which is all about reusing food waste.
Awesome.
So it's a good thing.
And is it it's a relatively new newish beer?
No, it's been around for a while. They're getting good distribution. You can buy this in Waitrose, obviously.
Yeah.
And you can buy it online at Beer Hawk as well. So yes, they're good. So their range includes Toast Pure Bread Pale Ale. They've got a Blooming Lovely Session IPA and a much needed craft lager. So they're good on puns
does
as well.
Does it cost a lot of dough, Ben?
It
how
does.
Much, how much is it?
Sorry. I don't actually know. My wife bought it for me.
Oh, that's a nice gesture.
So that's nice. She's nice. So there we go. That's my spit or swallow.
Love it.
Good. I told you it was going to be great, and it was.
Drinks-based podcast information goes, that was great.
Yes. Thanks, guys.
Small pool you're fishing in.
Yes.
Good.
So the next thing we are going to be doing today is we're going to be tasting some spirits, and that means we're going over to you, Tom, and
we're going to be tasting rum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sam Capehorn, the Mistress of Wine, and you're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
We all say yeah to rum, but not everyone does, you know, because when we do our tastings with people and we bring out rum, sometimes people are a little bit apprehensive about
Why?
It. Old-fashioned associations with the spirit. In this country, we became particularly fond of navy-style rums, which are very dark and quite assertive rums. The Cuban style of rum, which is a lot lighter, was more popular in America, particularly after Prohibition, when they were going down to Havana to drink. There are lots of different styles of rum, and today I'm going to talk about aged rum.
Quick question. A dark and stormy, that's a cocktail.
It is a cocktail.
Is that a rum-based cocktail?
It is. Gosling's rum. In fact, interestingly, they trademarked that. So if you have a dark and stormy on a menu, it's trademarked as a Gosling's rum product.
Yeah.
And I've been to Bermuda and enjoyed their rum. But their rum's is imported from lots of different islands around the Caribbean because one of the sort of big ends of the rum industry. But rum, at its heart, is sugar. And for that reason alone, if you don't think you like it, you probably should address it because most people in this country...
I had it on
like
my Weetabix this morning, Demerara sugar.
Oh, I thought you were going to say rum.
No.
But Demerara sugar. Yeah, we're going to talk about Demerara sugar and we're going to talk about two different rums that are made with different sugars. One of them will be Demerara sugar. And I know you're keen to know, Ben, whether your Demerara sugar is a healthier choice.
Yeah,
we'll just get
wife
that out of the way.
I really did have a go.
It's exactly the same, apparently.
Is it?
Yeah,
same
sort
sugar.
Of sugar content.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sorry.
No. I just want to clear that up with your wife. She's probably right. The reason that you might think it's just there hasn't been quite the same level of research because we all eat white sugar here. So all the research into sugar has been done on.
Yeah. White but sugar. I think it's a bit like white or brown bread, I think. Or brown because it's.
You're probably wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Ben is currently, and it's a shame we haven't got a video for this. He's showing us his belly, and it's beautiful. Yes, it's obtained from sugarcane. Sugarcane is a grass harvested and pressed, and they extract the sugary waters and then they're fermented and then they're distilled. There aren't a lot of regulations around rum. It can be made anywhere in the world. We tend to sort of think of it as only a Caribbean product, but actually it can be made anywhere in the world. Predominantly made in tropical climates where it's aged, and the tropical aging process means that it will age in a barrel, it will take on a lot of the characteristics of that barrel at a lot quicker rates than spirits do in temperate climates. So as well as the sugar, the influence of the barrel, these are things that are adding those lovely caramel and sweeter notes to rum. Don't be afraid of it. It's great. We love it. And we've got two rums that will particularly showcase the glory of the sugar today. And we're going to try Diplomático Reserva Exclusiva first. So, as I said, Diplomático Reserva Exclusiva is a Venezuelan rum. So, to prove the point straight off the bat, we've got something that's been made in Venezuela.
So, quick question. What is the difference between different rums? Obviously, you've got branding, you've got different countries, but they're all essentially made from sugarcane.
They are, and the byproduct of a sugarcane, a refined sugar molasses, would be one way of creating your base product. So that molasses would then, you'd add water to it and then you'd ferment it. Or you can use the sugarcane juice, which is more a process that would be rum agricole, which is made in Martinique, which is a bit more of an earthier spirit. There are different styles. There's white rum, so you'll know Bacardi, Havana Club do a white rum as
well.
So
why is that white?
Because they, they'll have charcoal filtered out.
Oh, the colour.
The colour. Bacardi was made specifically as a rum for cocktails, for mixed drinks.
So it's perfect. You cough as well.
Just drinking it already. Yeah. So there are lots of different styles. The Navy rum we talked about, spiced rum, of course. You might have tried things like Kraken. And Diplomático is an aged rum, and we sort of pitch it about the 10 years and up.
And quite alcoholic, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, these rums are coming in around the 40% mark. I think they're both 40% ABV, they are.
Each region and each island has, on the whole, a characteristic.
That would be fair to say. Because there's no regulations, every sort of island has developed its own style. So in Jamaica, you would expect a rum like Appleton, which is quite a robust, darker rum. And going back to Cuba, they aren't particularly known for their lighter styles. Trinidad, they use column stills, which make a slightly lighter spirit, and mix with pot still rums, but that might be a lighter style than, say, Jamaica. Venezuela, they've been making rum there since the late 1800s, and it's all off the back of the movement of sugar in the 17th, 18th century. It was popular white gold. The Europeans were moving it all around. And sugarcane grows particularly well in Venezuela. And we've been lucky enough to go and visit Venezuela and taste the rum there. Oh. Yeah, well, you know, kind of a big deal. And it's a beautiful country. We tend to associate it a bit with violence. We shouldn't. There's a lot of the beautiful people there. They've won the Miss World contest more times than any other nation on the planet, which is worth adding.
Good research, Tom.
I know. Well, you know, go deep. When I get into the Miss World, I go deep. And they're really naturally beautiful. They've got like Los Roques Islands of natural beauty off the coast, where they have turtle sanctuary, in fact.
Remember, we were in this bar.
I was in a bar.
Remember
with
this
you,
bar?
Ben,
tell the listeners about that time that turtle.
Well,
came
we were
in
there, and the turtle actually came into the bar while we were in there, and it was trying to tell
this
us some
joke.
Of this,
this
some of this rum,
happened.
Really giving it the hard shell. This is so sad. But when we went to Venezuela, we met up with another distillery, not Diplomático, actually Santa Teresa Distillery, who have a program, Project Alcatraz, and they reform criminals outside of the favelas, which is where all the violence is, and they reform them through the rum distillery. But I mean, I was there talking to this guy who at the age of 15 was the most feared assassin in Venezuela.
1-5,
yeah. So there are problems there, but they're trying, and Diplomático is the same, working with the local community and trying to get people involved. So it's doing good things as well.
What was he like? Was he a nice fellow?
He was actually, but he was very quiet. He's obviously had a lot going on in his brain there. I didn't find out until after I'd spoken to him. He was then a bodyguard for the distillers.
And what did you chat about with him?
Well, it was through a translator. He didn't speak English. They were talking about how the distillers went into the favelas, and they were two white guys. And when they went and approached these teenagers and asked them if they would want to come out of the favelas and get jobs, they were both stood there with guns behind their back. Not sure if these guys were police, pretty much ready to shoot them in the head and then run. So, yeah, they were quite tasty, I think you'd say.
But nothing you wouldn't have encountered in St Albans.
No. I mean, in Harpenden specifically, Ben, we just deal with it, you know. This is a premium rum. And
It is delicious,
and they're a blend of different rums from different barrels. And at Diplomático Reserva Exclusiva, the master blender takes some of the rum from the best barrels. Now, rum predominantly ages in old American oak barrels, and we talked about American oak before in the bourbon industry, where they make these barrels, use them for their bourbon, and then they make new barrels for the next batch. So these barrels go out into the rest of the world. And in the case of rum, they use a lot of American oak. In fact, mostly American oak, although in Martinique and Agricole, they might use French cognac barrels. So we're going to encounter a bit of vanilla on the nose. Mm. There are rums in here of 12 years old. And that aging, I think, with the sugar, gives it almost a note of chocolate. I don't know if anyone else is agreeing.
I've got a quick question. So with rum, mm-hmm. do you drink it on the rocks? Is most rum drunk with cocktails?
In this country, it would be predominantly drunk with Coke, rum and Coke. Yeah. That would be the biggest bar call.
Yeah.
What we are trying to do as the Thinking Drinkers, and you are trying to do as a Mistress of Wine, is try and enlighten people a bit more in their imbibing behaviour. This should be drunk neat. Mm. And
with ice?
Yes, I would have it with a single piece of ice. But if you don't add ice, you're going to get a lot more of the flavour. Because start to chill something, you lose a bit of those flavour.
And get aromas. Some dilution.
And you get a bit of dilution, which is nice in a way because it opens it up a bit and it might temper. So it's sort of 40% ABV. Mm. It is strong. And it makes it last a bit longer. So ice is not to be frowned on. And also, and this is the perfect thing to drink after dinner.
Pina colada.
You could have it in a pina colada. A great cocktail.
Overdue a comeback, I think.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bartenders would argue they have already helped it come back and they're making twists on pina coladas. Although it's a sort of much maligned drink, the bartenders just hold it with a bit of reverence because it's tasty. It's a tasty beverage.
And probably quite healthy, all that lovely coconut in it. And
Yeah,
quite a lot of cream.
Cream.
And alcohol.
Yeah.
So, what do people get on that Venezuelan
delicious.
Rum?
Delicious. I get the vanilla more than anything.
Vanilla. I get the sort of spices. There's a bit of nutmeg in there for me.
Some absolutely love it.
Coffee, almost
wonderful.
Bitterness. Yeah. It's beautiful stuff. And we try this in our show. We're going to be doing this in our shows around the UK this year. And it really is a game changer for people on rum. They taste it and they just think, oh, I do
like
rum.
I think people still associate dark rum with Uncle Albert from Only Fools
exactly,
and Horses.
Exactly, that naval
stuff. And that is a totally different drink. I still think there's value in that end of things. But this is much more nuanced. It's got much more complexity. It's easier to drink. It doesn't have that kind of heaviness to it.
Mm.
What I like about this, it's got the kind of accessibility of like a bourbon, but with the sort of complexity of a cognac, you know what I mean? It sort of has that.
And is it kind of a digestive?
Well, this is, I mean, when I was in Venezuela,
looking at all the hot women.
Yeah.
And turtles.
And turtles.
Well, I was looking at the turtle heads. I was really enjoying it neat. And weirdly, the story in Los Roques took a turn for the worse because I drank a bottle of this, which is not responsible, listeners. And I did lose my passport and wallet on a beach in the middle of a tropical storm. And then I had to get flown across from Los Roques to Venezuela. And a pilot then flew my passport, which turned up separately. And I had to run for a plane. So don't drink a bottle of it. But I did enjoy just drinking it neat in the sunshine. So I don't think I don't think you need to think about when you should be drinking it. Just if you fancy a rum, have a rum. It's nice. It's a nice bottle. It comes in a lovely sort of cardboardy container as well.
Like a box.
Good for gifting.
Like a box.
Good for gifting, Sam. Well said. Write that in the Times, why don't you?
And well, next, Tom, what are we tasting next?
We should probably move on.
Yes. I'm trying to keep this on.
Not really, though, are you? You keep asking me questions.
I know.
Guyana. We're going to Guyana.
Guyana.
So this is the home of Demerara sugar. And one of the biggest sugar-producing countries in the world. The Demerara sugar is still very popular around the world. And Ben does
put it on my Weetabix.
I don't know if I mentioned that.
Got two Weetabix.
This is called El Dorado. El Dorado rum. And we've got El Dorado 12-year-old. And El Dorado is the name of the mystical city of gold that the Europeans were searching for. Well, it's the name of the town was Manoa, apparently. Loads of Europeans, Sir Walter Raleigh was one of the people that went over to look for this mystical city of gold, and apparently the king would spray himself in gold, but they never found it. It didn't exist. But they did make a children's cartoon series about it. Do you remember this?
Yes,
Cities of Gold, which
Sing
is
it.
All about it. Oh, Cities of Gold. That's how it went. It was produced by the Japanese and French together, which I found quite interesting.
Well, that combination of the French and the Japanese. Ever sat on a Japanese toilet?
No.
They are warm, and after you they sort of have a little motor that...
A hygiene thing.
Yeah, and it could... bucket and it goes round and it cleans it. The French, it's just a hole in the ground.
So true, but they do have bidets.
Yeah, that's true.
To be fair to them.
That is true.
To be fair. And we only have wet wipes. So
yeah, the hole in the ground is, they're lesser spotted these days, aren't they?
Yeah, they're usually campsites. On the side of roads, aren't they, motorways. Yeah.
Anyway, if you combine those two cultures, you just get a normal loo.
Yeah, I see. It averages out as just a normal loo with loo paper. El Dorado, I'm sure, love this association with toilets, but let's move forward with
the
rum.
Taste it?
Let's taste it. And it is made with Demerara sugar. Now, that is going to add a little richness to this that might not be in the other rum, a spicy note to it. It's also made on wooden stills.
Ah, wooden still?
Wooden still. The oldest working Kofi still. It's not a wooden bottom, but the wood is in a part of the
That'll
pot still. And in fact, the condensers are copper. But the vapours passing around a wooden pot still add another dimension to the spirit. And they take all these different marks or new make rums and then they blend them together. And then they age them. And as the age would suggest, it's 12 years. So they're blended from different age stocks. The youngest would be 12 years old.
And that's incredible, given that the climate, 12 years, so that the rum's in the barrel all that time and it's incredibly hot, I imagine.
Yes.
And it's going, and so it's aging. Really getting a lot from the wood.
Well, this is it. I mean, going back to that idea of the temperate climate in whiskey in Europe versus the tropical aging conditions of a rum, they estimate that it would add the same value of 3 years resting in tropical conditions is the same as 1 year in temperate climate. So, whiskey.
A 12 year old rum is equivalent of a 36 year old whiskey?
Yeah, roughly. I mean, the other thing is you have to be careful.
There must be a sort of an arch of.
There is, and you have to be careful as well because you don't want to leave anything in wood for too long because then you just get wood. Mm. And while I'm sure that's beneficial for you, Ben, less so for Sam, you don't really just want wood. You want something else within the spirit. Yeah, you need
something. No, they both look quite expensive. I've got
They're both retailing between, depending on where you buy them, around £35 to £45 mark. And I would suggest buying them online somewhere like the whiskeyexchange.com or Master of Malt, and you'll get a good price on that.
Just to go to the tasting of this.
Yeah. There's
quite different.
For me, with a Demerara rum, there's a bit more of a smoky, earthy quality to it to start with. And it sort of builds in the barrel to a spicy. And I find this a little bit spicier than the Venezuelan, which is a bit more chocolatey. So actually, it's quite a nice transition in these two-aged rums to go from something, if you're new to rum, an introductory Diplomático, which has got that sweeter, chocolatey note, then sort of taking it up to a slightly spicier note with the 12-year-old. They've got a great reputation, El Dorado and Diplomático. El Dorado with the bartenders, the 15-year-old is highly revered. That's a bit more expensive. But very, very good rum.
I think rum doesn't get the credit it deserves.
I think one of the problems it's had is it's not very heavily regulated. So in the cases of even tequila now, we're seeing a lot of good quality tequila arrive here because of the CRT, the regulatory board.
Trendy. I mean, back in the day at uni, you just drank a tequila, a Zambuca, you know, as a shot drink, I think. Yeah. Whereas now, it's perceived as being premium and quite cool and more artisan, maybe.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
But yeah, it wouldn't really cross my mind to go to a bar and order myself a rum. Mm. But maybe I will.
Now. Maybe now.
Also, I think especially the Diplomático.
That's my favourite.
That was
love it.
A dessert. Like in an ice cream. Yeah.
With an ice cream or in an ice cream.
Poured over. That's what I give my 2-year-old.
Make him sleep.
Yeah.
So everyone's feeling a little bit lightheaded, I imagine, after that. Quite a lot of neat spirits we've just drunk, listeners.
That's great.
Try it at home. Do try this at home.
Well, thank you, Tom. That was very informative. So, Sam.
Ben.
It's your part of the podcast.
It is indeed.
And I am, for one, very excited about this. And so don't let me down. What is it about? It's Legends of Liquor.
What, I mean, my 1 minute I've got left.
No, we'll cut.
Banged on and on.
We also talked about Barbie for quite a while, didn't we?
Don't worry, we'll cut Tom's bit. That won't make the final cut.
Yeah.
So for my Legends of Liquor, I'm doing another slightly, you know, feminist one. One for the girls.
Oh, go girls.
The Champagne Widows. But you guys know a bit about this, I think.
Yeah.
So
basically, back in the day, a number of very famous champagne houses, the men keeled over and died, and the young, quite young widows took over the house And this was back in the day, sort of 19th century, when that really wasn't the done thing to do. And these women actually were really amazing. As in, they just went into a sort of a man's world and became the kind of the first business women of the time. So the most famous one is... Who do you think the most famous one is?
Madame Veuve Clicquot.
That's right. So yeah. Veuve in French. Ben, you obviously know this being French. Part French. Widow. So
I didn't know that. I thought it meant get up and go.
No. So the Champagne
down,
House,
that's good.
Veuve Clicquot, Veuve meaning widow, and Clicquot being the name of her husband, Barbe Nicole was the lady's name, and she hadn't been married all that long when he died in 1805, and she was left 27 years of age, and she decided to run the Champagne House. And she was awesome. She invented quite a few things. So not only did she go in, take over the Champagne House and basically create a mega brand, because actually the full name of Veuve Clicquot is Veuve Clicquot Nicolas Ponsaldin, which actually is her surname because she came from quite a posh family. Her father was a baron.
What was this? Ponsaldin?
I don't speak French, but Ponsaldin.
Ponsaldin.
So if you look on the on a label of Veuve, you've got the Veuve Clicquot, and then underneath you've got the longer bit that basically combines the two families. But it's retained the name Veuve Clicquot because a number of other houses started off with the Veuve in front, and then it got dropped over the years. But this one has retained it, and it means, you know, Widow Clicquot. Mm. But so she was awesome. She invented riddling.
Yes.
Do you know what riddling is?
No.
Is that when they...
Yes, you do.
Is that when they turn the bottle?
Yeah, when they turn the bottle, remouage.
Yeah.
So basically when the, when you've got to do the second fermentation to make it sparkling, when the yeast die, you get a lot of cloud and sediment in the bottle, and then you basically riddle it, you turn it, and you move it to sort of an upright position, so the neck's pointing down, and then the sediment all drops into the neck. So she invented that.
Now, I heard that there was this man called LaSalle, who was one of the red-trousered... what were they called?
Look at my effing redtrousers.com.
Yeah, no, it was... he was one of Napoleon's main generals, General LaSalle, and he was a real rogue. And you know the Rick Mail character who... Captain Flashheart.
Yes, he's based on Blackadder.
Yeah, Blackadder. Yeah. So he was a real sort of bounder, and he bedded loads of ladies.
A cad,
exactly. And he used to go through Champagne... And apparently, he had a bit of a thing for Madame Veuve Clicquot.
Oh,
I don't
really?
Think, I don't know whether they ever got it on.
She was a widow, but yeah. She had interest.
I don't know. I'm not sure she remarried.
But okay. Anyway, so he used to...
anyway, Ben's all finished.
Listen,
off, yeah.
Shut up. And this story's not going to finish very well because I'm not sure of the exact details. But he used to come along and...
Don't worry, it's being cut.
Sobrage, he used to chop the top of the cork off.
Yeah.
Or the top of the bottle off, and apparently that's where she got the idea.
Oh, really?
Yes, I think that is what's happened. And he was amazing because he used to do loads of good
stuff. Excuse me, who's Legend of Liquor?
What you've done here is what men have been doing for centuries.
It's basically
take the woman's story. Yeah, and say, yeah, well, she didn't really come up with it, did she? Darling little thing, I think you'll find there was a bloke involved.
Yeah.
And he had a sword, and he did it.
Yes, and he had red trousers, and he... often drop them round his ankles.
Mr. Pants Fall Down. Yeah. And that's where we get the name.
Well, he sounds fabulous, anyway, Ben.
He sounds like a liar.
Thanks for introducing him into my section. And do you know what else that she invented? Champagne related.
Corks?
No.
Bubbles?
No.
No.
I'll tell you.
Green bottles?
No, wait, hold on. No, I'm going to get this. There's nothing else in champagne.
Rosé champagne.
Oh!
I mean, I think this is two major things.
Yeah.
Well, three. Not only did she take over the Champagne House, she basically invented riddling and then decided, because apparently they used to put some sort of elderflower into rosé. Don't know why. She was the first person to put some of her boozy red wine into champagne and make it pink.
Well, that's there good. We go.
So,
good.
Yeah, so my Legislica is really a group of widows, but she is the...
Widow number one.
Yeah, she's widow number one. The prestige cuvee at Veuve is named after her because she was known as the Grande Dame of Champagne, and their champagne is called Le Grande Dame.
So she enjoyed her acclaim in her lifetime. This isn't so, someone who died and then all these
things
have come
about. No, I imagine she was known as Le Grande Dame,
okay,
but that prestige cuvees wouldn't have been on the scene
at the time, she would have been known as that.
And so I think
she did get her
Yeah, and
dues.
She did a really great job. She shipped the wines around the world. She got the champagne into Russia. And
Whoa, big market.
Yeah. Mm. So she
they loved their champagne.
They did like their champagne. Basically, she was, you know, an amazing businesswoman, probably the first businesswoman of modern, you know,
times. Also, who's to say that her husband
would have done that good a job?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then briefly, other amazing houses that had women at the helm at crucial periods following the bereavement of their husbands were Pommery, Champagne Pommery, which was called Veuve Pommery for years, but then they actually dropped the widow bit. She came after Madame Clicquot because that was in 1860. And she was called Louise. And again, they've named their top cuvée, Cuvée Louise, after her. That's still around today. And Laurent Perrier and Roederer.
Laurent Perrier, and they're all women.
And she ran it for nearly 40 years. And then Roederer as well.
I'm starting to think there's some kind of conspiracy here.
There's no
All the men seem to be dying.
And the women take over the business and find fame and fortune.
Well,
how did they die? Perhaps that's
something
to investigate.
Yeah, it's
it's a bit of a Poirot episode.
The Champagne Widows. And to finish, last but not least, was the wonderful Lily Bollinger, who took over from Jacques Bollinger on his death, and she took control in 1941 for 30 years until 1971. She basically expanded production. She bought vineyards. She travelled the world. She promoted the brand. And, you know, she only stepped down in the 70s.
Really?
Yeah. And, of course, to conclude, her wonderful quote on champagne. Do you know the famous quote?
No.
I drink it when I'm happy and when I'm sad. Sometimes I drink it when I'm alone. When I have company, I consider it obligatory. I trifle with it if I'm not hungry and drink it when I am. Otherwise, I never touch it unless I'm thirsty.
Beautiful.
And Bollinger, of course, is the champagne of choice for James Bond, who is also a great feminist, just to finish your feminist
And let's also not forget that I won the Bollinger medal. Right.
Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. That brings us seamlessly to the end of this podcast. Because that's the end.
Well, yes. I would hope so. It's been a long one. I look forward to Ian editing this one.
Ian, so all that's left to do is to thank you both.
Well,
for
you
being,
should thank me.
Thank
do you,
you
know
Tom,
who I am?
Tom Sandham, and thank you Sam Caporn, and
thank you
Ben, who held this ship together. Thank you most of all to the listeners, and join us next week when there'll be the same kind of thing, but in a different order.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and like to learn more about drink, then you can see Ben and Tom, the Thinking Drinkers, in our live show where we'll be tasting alcohol, making you laugh. We're on tour. All dates and ticket prices can be found on our website, www.thinkingdrinkers.com. Please buy a ticket.
And if you want any more wine information, then go to my site, www.themistressofwine.com. Thanks.
Thank you for listening and see you next week.
Cheers.
Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.